Hi everyone, I'm Alistair Willis, Music Director of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Welcome to our Aha with Alistair podcast. Today I'll be sharing some insights on our recent Jack M. Champagne Masterworks concert called American Composers. Now when we think of American composers, who immediately comes to mind? For me it would be Aaron Copland, Samuel Barber, Leonard Bernstein, John Williams. In this podcast, I'm going to make the case that there might be a few names missing, like William Dawson, Florence Price, Quinn Mason. Now, until a few years ago, these are names I hadn't heard of. But after our last concert, I'm convinced we need to hear their music more often. Let me start with some context. The classical music world, long dominated by dead white European composers, was spurred by the murder of George Floyd to once and for all make real progress on inclusion. Orchestras everywhere began to program more and more music by African American and underrepresented composers. The South Bend Symphony Orchestra formed an Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee and committed to diversifying programming, the board, the staff, and the orchestra itself. To engage our community with the entire diversity of orchestral music requires a diversity of thought and experience that we'd been lacking. This attention is already bearing fruit, and our concert on April the 2nd, 2022 was just one of many examples. It was the first time the South Bend Symphony Orchestra programmed a Masterworks concert consisting solely of African-American composers. Let's start with Quinn Mason. Quinn is a genius. He's been hailed as the next classical music superstar. He's been performed and commissioned all around the world. He's 26. My friend and fellow conductor, William White, was the first person to tell me about Quinn. Thank you, Will. Quinn has a remarkable understanding of orchestral textures and colors. His music has depth, lightness, and transparency, which I find extremely interesting, and so immediately programmed a piece of his for our Martin Luther King Jr. celebration concert in 2019. The piece was Passages of Joy, and it turned out that we gave the world premiere of Passages of Joy that night. In 2021, we played another piece of his called Reflections on a Memorial. So, when we were programming our American Composers concert, the biggest challenge was trying to decide which piece of his to include. We chose his Joyous Trilogy for at least three reasons. Firstly, it's brilliant. Secondly, I wanted to begin the concert with joy. And third, because we already had a connection to it. The first section of a Joyous Trilogy is a revised version of Passages of Joy, the piece we premiered, and then with two added movements. The South Bend Symphony Orchestra and I gave the 13th performance ever of this piece. So no premiere this time, however it did feel like the piece was coming home. And the music, oh, it's really joyous. Quinn has the orchestra bubble with activity and energy, happiness and cheerfulness. I can't help smiling as I hear it. Let's hear the opening section, which he calls Running, because it's always moving and the energy never stops. Thank you. The second section is called Reflection. It's introspective yet uplifting with its meditative trombone solo. I asked Quinn what the trombone represented, and he said, nostalgia. The third section is aptly called Renewal, as the energy picks back up and the orchestral colors are simply luminous. Let's listen to the ending. Such uplifting music. And starting a concert with joy is always special. If you peek inside the score, you'll see the dedication, which reads, "Dedicated to Will White, a friend and mentor for many years now, and one of the most joyous people I know." I love how our second piece on the program connected to a joyous trilogy. It's the Piano Concerto in One Movement by Florence Price, which also has three sections, and its last section is a dance that is full of joy. Florence Price was the first female African-American composer to earn a national reputation and have a symphony performed by a major orchestra. She grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, and had as privileged an upbringing as was possible in the early 1900s for an African-American. Her dad was a successful dentist, the only African-American dentist in the city, and her mom was a music teacher who made sure Florence received the best quality music lessons available. Florence went to the East Coast to study at the New England Conservatory of Music, graduated in just 3 years, and went on to teach in Atlanta University. When she returned to Little Rock to teach at Shorter College, the town by then was racially segregated. Witnessing a public lynching made her leave there and journey to Chicago, where there was a lot more openness and opportunity for African-American musicians. It was there that she won the Wanamaker Prize for composers, and later, in 1934, her Piano Concerto in One Movement was premiered by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. During the 1940s, she sent her music and wrote letters to all the top orchestras in America and was constantly rejected. The conductor of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, Serge Koussevitzky, wouldn't even reply to her letters. In her letters, she called her own race and gender a handicap. Florence even struggled to find a publisher for her music so her legacy could live on. Fast forward to 2009. New homeowners in a Chicago suburb discovered in the attic a dusty box full of sheet music. It turned out that house had been Florence's summer home, and the music in that box was all hers. One of those pieces was the Piano Concerto in One Movement. Today, Florence Price's music is being programmed more and more by orchestras everywhere. In fact, she just won a Grammy for her first and third symphonies, performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Yannick Nézet-Séguin. Yannick said that this award is in recognition of her rightful place in the canon of exceptional American classical music. Okay, the beginning of her piano concerto in one movement is reminiscent of romantic composers like Schumann, Mendelssohn, and Liszt, plunging quickly into a brief piano cadenza before the full orchestra takes over. Here is our soloist, Michelle Kahn, playing with the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. The second movement is composed as a spiritual. We can recognize the style, but not the melody, as its original. It starts with a prayer from the strings, and then a duet between piano and oboe, here played by Lindsay Wiley. The third movement is based on a dance called the Juba. Here, Florence Price has gone back to her roots. The Juba is an African dance that was brought over by slaves to the cotton fields of South Carolina and was very popular before the Civil War. It's full of infectious syncopation and joy, and it's a forerunner of ragtime. Now, when I was in high school, I was obsessed with ragtime, with Scott Joplin. And so this last section is particularly meaningful for me. Here's an excerpt. Wonderful music. The second half of our concert was devoted to a most magnificent symphony. I first heard it on the radio, mid-performance. Now, I love playing Guess the Composer to any piece I don't know, but this time I was completely stumped. I heard lots of Dvorak, Tchaikovsky, Mahler, Prokofiev, Hindemith, but all I was sure of was that it wasn't by any of them. It was exciting, moving, emotional, dramatic, all the things I love about music. To me, it sounded that lots of the music was based on spirituals, but I didn't recognize any of them. I had not heard of William Dawson until the radio presenter said his name at the end, nor had I heard his Negro Folk Symphony. Now, a few years later, this piece has really enriched my life and the lives of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra musicians. Dawson wanted those who heard his symphony to know that it was, quote, unmistakably not the work of a white man. It premiered in 1934, the same year as the Piano Concerto by Florence Price. It was hailed as a masterpiece and consequently in demand from orchestras everywhere. There weren't enough scores or parts to weather the demand, and consequently, interest in the piece eventually declined. There are three movements in Dawson's Negro Folk Symphony. Each have titles. The first is called The Bond of Africa, and it begins with a solo French horn playing a motive, an incomplete melody. Dawson calls this the missing link motif, which, quote, represents the link that was taken out of the human chain when the first African was taken from the shores of his native land and sent to slavery. This missing link reoccurs several times throughout the symphony, and each time it's never completed. The second movement is titled Hope in the Night and begins with a sad melody from the English horn. Under it is a repeated, monotonous trudge of an accompaniment, which represents, quote, the monotonous life of the people whose bodies were baked by the sun and lashed by the whip for 250 years. the end of this movement, the accompanying monotonous trudge is reduced to just a drumbeat and shimmering strings. It's the most chilling and darkest moment of the symphony. The third movement is built on themes from American folk songs and contains the most joy of all the movements. Here's the ending. William Dawson's Negro Folk Symphony is still a masterpiece today. Its themes of cultural identity and shared humanity are universal and still so relevant. This concert has left me eager to explore and discover more of William Dawson, Florence Price, and Quinn Mason's music, and the many more American composers that are out there. Thanks for listening, everyone.